Genesis 19, and we're reading the whole chapter. The two angels arrived at Sodom in the evening, and Lot was sitting in the gateway of the city. When he saw them, he got up to meet them and bow down with his face to the ground. "My lords," he said, "please turn aside to your servant's house. You can wash your feet and spend the night, and then go on your way early in the morning." "No," they answered, "we will spend the night in the square." But he insisted so strongly that they did go with him and entered his house. He prepared a meal for them, baking bread without yeast, and they ate. Before they had gone to bed, all the men from every part of the city of Sodom, both young and old, surrounded the house. They called to Lot, "Where are the men who came to you tonight? Bring them out to us so that we can have sex with them." Lot went outside to meet them and shut the door behind him and said, "No, my friends, don't do this wicked thing. Look, I have two daughters who have never slept with a man. Let me bring them out to you, and you can do what you like with them. But don't do anything to these men, for they have come under the protection of my roof." "Get out of our way," they replied. "This fellow came here as a foreigner, and now he wants to play the judge. We'll treat you worse than them." They kept bringing pressure on Lot and moved forward to break down the door. But the men inside reached out and pulled Lot back into the house and shut the door. Then they struck the men who were at the door of the house, young and old, with blindness, so that they could not find the door. The two men said to Lot, "Do you have anyone else here, sons-in-law, sons or daughters, or anyone else in the city who belongs to you? Get them out of here, because we are going to destroy this place. The outcry to the Lord against its people is so great that he has sent us to destroy it." So Lot went out and spoke to his sons-in-law, who were pledged to marry his daughters. He said, "Hurry and get out of this place, because the Lord is about to destroy the city." But his sons-in-law thought he was joking. With the coming of dawn, the angels urged Lot, saying, "Hurry, take your wife and your two daughters who are here, or you will be swept away when the city is punished." When he hesitated, the men grasped his hand and the hands of his wife and of his two daughters and led them safely out of the city, for the Lord was merciful to them. As soon as they had brought them out, one of them said, "Flee for your lives. Don't look back, and don't stop anywhere in the plain. Flee to the mountains, or you will be swept away." But Lot said to them, "No, my lord, please. Your servant has found favor in your eyes, and you have shown great kindness to me in sparing my life. But I can't flee to the mountains. This disaster will overtake me, and I'll die. Look, here is a town near enough to run to, and it is small. Let me flee to it. It is very small, isn't it? Then my life will be spared." He said to him, "Very well, I will grant this request too. I will not overthrow the town you speak of, but flee there quickly, because I cannot do anything until you reach it." That is why the town was called Zoar. By the time Lot reached Zoar, the sun had risen over the land. Then the Lord rained down burning sulfur on Sodom and Gomorrah from the Lord out of the heavens. Thus he overthrew those cities and the entire plain, destroying all those living in the cities, and also the vegetation in the land. But Lot's wife looked back, and she became a pillar of salt. Early the next morning, Abraham got up and returned to the place where he had stood before the Lord. He looked down towards Sodom and Gomorrah, towards all the land of the plain, and he saw dense smoke rising from the land, like smoke from a furnace. So when God destroyed the cities of the plain, he remembered Abraham, and he brought Lot out of the catastrophe that overthrew the cities where Lot had lived. Lot and his two daughters left Zoar and settled in the mountains, for he was afraid to stay in Zoar. He and his two daughters lived in a cave. One day the elder daughter said to the younger, "Our father is old, and there is no man round here to give us children, as is the custom over all the earth. Let's get our father to drink wine, and then sleep with him, and preserve our family line through our father." That night, they got their father to drink wine, and the elder daughter went in and slept with him. He was not aware of it when she lay down or when she got up. The next day, the elder daughter said to the younger, "Last night I slept with my father. Let's get him drunk. Let's get him to drink wine again tonight, and you go in and sleep with him, so we can preserve our family line through our father." So they got their father to drink wine that night also, and the younger daughter went in and slept with him. Again, he was not aware of it when she lay down or when she got up. So both of Lot's daughters became pregnant by their father. The elder daughter had a son, and she named him Moab. He is the father of the Moabites today. The younger daughter also had a son, and she named him Ben-Ammi. He is the father of the Ammonites of today. Well, this chapter does not make for pleasant reading, even by the standards of today's world. These things are very bad that we've read of: attempted gang rape and incest. You could imagine the uproar in the media if things like this were to happen in the world today. Such reports do not make pleasant reading. And frankly, it's not the sort of chapter that you would choose to preach from if you weren't going systematically through a book of the Bible. And yet, it is in the Bible, and it is here in God's word for a reason. Here were two cities so bad that they had to be destroyed by God, with burning sulfur raining down from the heavens. And the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah is seen in the rest of the Bible as a sober reminder that God will judge. It's referred to in Deuteronomy 29 and verse 23, when Moses was speaking to the people of Israel, and he encourages them on the one hand to obey God's law, but also warns them of what would happen if they turn away from God. If they rejected his covenant, their land would be left like that of Sodom and Gomorrah's land. Jesus himself spoke about the destruction of Sodom, and he warned that there would be destruction at his coming, just as in the days of Noah and as in the days of Lot. The universal flood in the day of Noah and the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah were kind of types pointing to the final destruction of the sinful world. Let me just read to you Luke 17 and from verse 28, where our Lord is speaking. "It was the same in the days of Lot. People were eating and drinking, buying and selling, planting and building. But the day Lot left Sodom, fire and sulfur rained down from heaven and destroyed them all. It will be just like this on the day the Son of Man is revealed." So Jesus saw these events as historical events, and saw them as a sober reminder that God one day will judge the whole world. Now, there have always been people who dismiss any idea of God's judgment. But to ignore the fact that God will judge, or to laugh it off as medieval scaremongering, is hardly going to change God's plans. Because God is a God of justice. We saw that when we looked in chapter 18 at the way Abraham pleaded for Sodom. He pleaded on the basis of God's justice, and in God's justice, God said he would not destroy the city if there were 10 righteous people in that city. In God's justice, he punishes sin. God is someone who is to be feared as well as someone who is to be loved. And so we need to take to heart what God is saying through this chapter here in Genesis 19. And I want to point out three things that we need to take to heart. And the first is this: we need to take to heart that human sin is very great. Human sin is very great. The reason so often that people do not want to accept that God judges is because they do not see how terrible sin is. Here in chapter 19, there's a lot of emphasis on sexual sin. Of course, this is not the only type of sin, but that's what is focused on here in Genesis 19. And we see two things that often drive sexual immorality. One is simply desire for pleasure, we could call that lust. And the other is desire for children. I guess a third thing that drives a lot of sexual immorality is desire for intimacy. And things that in and of themselves can be good things, like intimacy and obviously having children, can actually become motivations to do things that are so very bad. You see, sexual desire is not a bad thing. It's a God-given thing. But it is to be expressed only in marriage between one man and one woman. That is the pattern that God gave in Genesis chapter 2. And in verse 24 of Genesis 2, it says, "A man shall leave his father and mother and be united to his wife." God created Adam, and God gave one wife to Adam. And that is the pattern for marriage. And the rest of the Bible draws from that. That is where you go back to. That's what Jesus did when asked about divorce. He went back to the beginning. That is the pattern that God has given. Marriage is only between a man and one woman. Sexual union not only brings children into the world, but also deepens the bond between a husband and his wife. Sexual union thereby helps to not only bring a family into the world, but helps to form a loving family in which children can thrive. But the sinful heart doesn't want to give such commitment or mutual submission that ought to be the hallmark of marriage. It doesn't want to hear God's commands and sees God's commands as restrictive rather than a blessing. And so people, in their lust for sexual pleasure, give free rein to their desires. And every form of sexual aberration, practically, you can find in the pages of Genesis. It's astonishing, isn't it? That here, where God gave such a good gift, even in the early centuries of the world, we see it completely distorted. And that's what we have here in Genesis 19. Homosexuality, gang rape, incest. The thought of a loving home in which to raise children is far from the minds of those here in Genesis 19. As the men of Sodom gather around that door of Lot's, all they want is sexual gratification. Verse 4. All the men from every part of the city of Sodom, both young and old, surrounded the house. They called to Lot, "Where are the men who came to you tonight? Bring them out to us so that we can have sex with them." That is what drives so much sexual immorality: lust, unbridled. Others, like the daughters of Lot, want children more than marriage. That is what they say in verse 31. "One day the elder daughter said to the younger, 'Our father is old and there is no man round here to give us children, as is the custom all over the earth. Let's get our father to drink wine and then sleep with him and preserve our family line through our father.'" They see no prospect of getting married. They think their father is too old to find them a husband. They don't think that there are any possible husbands in that area. And so they resort to a particularly grotesque way of achieving their desire for children. They made their father drunk and got pregnant by him. Such was the depravity of their hearts. Although Lot's daughters had been rescued from Sodom, they had been greatly influenced by Sodom's immorality. For them, what mattered was, in their words, the custom all over the earth. This is what everyone does. They all have children. And what was guiding their life was not God's law, but was what everyone else was able to have. If others can have children, so can we. They wanted children, even if they had no husband. Now, they'd never slept with a man. We learn that from Lot back in verse 8. But in the end, the daughters of Lot showed no less restraint than the men of Sodom. Now, sin can show itself in many ways, not just in sexual immorality. At its core, sin is selfish. It says this: I want something, I'm going to have it, whatever God says. We sin when we seek pleasure at any cost. We sin when we seek intimacy at any cost, or recognition, or success, or wealth at any cost. We sin when we love these things, even if we seek them lawfully. Now, please don't misunderstand me. It's not that we cannot enjoy intimacy or enjoy wealth. But it is God that we need to put first and seek first. It all comes back to the first command: you shall have no other gods before me. It is God himself we are to seek. And when we seek other things before God, inevitably we end up breaking God's commands. Instead of trusting him and knowing that in loving God we find true intimacy and true joy and true pleasure, to seek anything other than God, at best, will leave you frustrated. To seek other things at any cost, well, you'll be very little different to the men of Sodom or the daughters of Lot. God gives good gifts. Satan cannot create good things. But what he does is distort them. And the sin in our hearts distorts the good things and puts them in the place of God. And what vileness results from that. Human sin is very great. It is so selfish. It says, I'm going to have this, irrespective of what God has said. The second thing we see in Genesis 19 is that God's judgment is very severe. God's judgment is very severe. The angels, these two angels, arrived at Sodom in the evening, and they saw for themselves how bad Sodom's sin was. It was only Lot in Sodom who invited the angels in. And when they said, no, we'll spend the night in the square, you can almost sense Lot's desperation. Don't spend the night in the square. As if to say, terrible things will happen to you if you do that. And so they're persuaded to come into Lot's house. But the rest of the city made no attempt to show hospitality to these visitors, but instead wanted to abuse them. Already the outcry of Sodom's wickedness had reached God's ears back in chapter 18 when God spoke with Abraham. But what happens here in this chapter only serves to confirm the wickedness of this city. And when God finally judged the people of Sodom and Gomorrah, everyone could see that God was being just, that these people deserved the punishment that God gave. And so the two cities were destroyed by fire. verse 24. Then the Lord rained down burning sulfur on Sodom and Gomorrah from the Lord out of the heavens. Thus he overthrew those cities and the entire plain, destroying all those living in the cities and also the vegetation in the land. The whole area was completely ruined. This had been that beautiful plain that Lot had chosen that was well watered. And no doubt these were wealthy cities with fine buildings and many people. But now they are totally destroyed. No one could escape apart from those rescued by the angels. The strongest, most fortified house could not withstand the burning sulfur that rained down from heaven. And so it will be at the end of the world. However much people get away with sin now, there will be no escape then. And this is the somber message of Genesis 19. God, in his justice, will punish a sinful world. He destroyed all those living in the city. It was a horrific occasion. And then there was Lot's wife. The angels had said, don't look back. They had to flee to the mountains, and the command was very clear, do not look back. But the problem with Lot's wife was that her heart was in Sodom. And though the angels pulled her from the danger physically, she was not changed spiritually. We read that she looked back and became a pillar of salt, verse 26. Far from being glad to leave that terrible city, she longed for it. Her house was there. All her possessions were there. Her friends were living there. It was her life. And she had nothing else that she wanted to live for. And so she looked back. And like the city, she perished. You know, Jesus, in talking about his return there in Luke chapter 17, he tells us, remember Lot's wife. Because what was going on in the heart of Lot is what can go on in the heart of so many people right through time. Lot, we read in 2 Peter 2 and verse 8, was tormented in his righteous soul by the lawless deeds that he saw. Now, it was a foolish thing for him to do, to go and live in this city. But nonetheless, his soul remained righteous, and he was tormented by the wickedness that he saw around him. But it seems his wife was not tormented by the lawless deeds that she saw. Whatever repulsion she may once have felt, by the end, her heart was in that wicked city. Now let me ask you, are you tormented in your soul by the sin that you see in this world? Or are you finding that you are tolerating that sin even in your own heart? Jesus says, remember Lot's wife. You see, if you love sin today, what makes you think that you will want to leave it when Jesus Christ returns? What makes you think that you'll be any different to Lot's wife if today you love sin? I can remember crossing a footbridge over a railway line. And there were a couple of boys playing on the railway tracks. And I don't think I've ever done this before, but I called out, get off the line. Well, they didn't do anything about it. And in the end, I just had to carry on. Thankfully, nothing happened to them. At least, I'm sure I would have heard and at local news if something had happened. But I can't imagine any of you here playing on railway tracks. I certainly hope none of you would ever do such a thing. I mean, you wouldn't go walking along the railway track. You know what? To persist in sin is like tying yourself to a railway track. You got it? It's pretty awful, isn't it? And yet that is what persisting in sin is like. There will be a sudden end. Are you holding on to sin in your heart? Remember Lot's wife. Turn from it today. Confess it and seek God's forgiveness. And seek his power to overcome that sin. Because God's judgment is very severe. If there's anything you pick up from Genesis 19, it is this: that God will judge our sin. If you love sin today, do not think that you'll suddenly want to leave it when Christ returns. It'll be too late. The third point we see here in Genesis 19 is this: that God's mercy is very great. Human sin is terrible. God's judgment is very severe. But thirdly, God's mercy is very great. God shows his mercy in this chapter in several ways. He shows his mercy actually when the angels strike with blindness the men of Sodom. Because that was a dramatic, supernatural thing to do to them, and they should have taken warning from that. But they didn't repent. Nonetheless, in God's mercy, he gave them that warning. And then God showed mercy to Lot's prospective son-in-laws. Because the angels tell Lot to go and warn anyone and everyone in his family or sons-in-law, sons or daughters, anyone else in the city who belongs to you, to get them out of here, because we're going to destroy this place. Verse 13. Presumably, Lot's sons-in-law had already been blinded, like the rest of the men of Sodom. And now they hear from Lot himself that the city was going to be destroyed. And yet, what do we read? Verse 14. His sons-in-law thought he was joking. And there are still scoffers saying, where is this judgment that God is going to bring? And yet God, in his mercy, gives these warnings. We also see God's mercy in the way in which he rescues Lot, his wife, and two daughters. Though Lot is described as righteous, nonetheless, he comes across as pretty undeserving, both in this chapter and earlier. He's made this terrible choice of living in Sodom. Yes, he did show hospitality to these two strangers, urging them to stay in his home and not in the city square. Yes, he bravely faced the hostile men of Sodom in his attempt to protect his guests. But what a foolish and dreadful thing he said when he offered the men of Sodom his two daughters. And then when he's told that the city is going to be destroyed, we read how he lingers. He doesn't rush out. I mean, possibly he was still trying to persuade people to leave the city. But even once the angels have dragged him and his family out, they're slow to obey what the angels say. And yet, as it says in verse 16, the Lord was merciful to them. In fact, God was remembering Abraham's prayer. Verse 29, so when God destroyed the cities of the plain, he remembered Abraham. And he brought Lot out of the catastrophe that overthrew the cities where Lot had lived. God was merciful. God was merciful. Every single one of us needs God's mercy Do you feel your need for God's mercy? You know, if you don't feel your need for God's mercy this morning, I fear for you. Romans 1:18. God's wrath is being revealed from heaven against all godlessness and wickedness of people. Hebrews 9 and verse 27. People are destined to die once, and after that to face judgment. Genesis 9 shows us that God will judge. There will be a day of accounting for every one of us, for every sin. We can see here that God is fair, that it's right for God to judge our sin. But can you also see here that God is merciful? Can you hear God pleading through Lot for the people of Sodom? Lot says to them in verse 7, "No, my friends, don't do this wicked thing." And God pleads with us, "Don't do those wicked things." And then we have Lot pleading with his sons-in-law, "Hurry and get out of this place." Verse 14, because the Lord is about to destroy the city. God is merciful. Can you see it in these pages? He is full of mercy. And in his mercy, he offers us salvation. In his mercy, he gave his son Jesus to take God's wrath and to bear that punishment on the cross. Picture for a moment the day of judgment when we all will have to appear before God. People are destined to die once and after that to face judgment. Picture it as a courtroom, and there is God, and one by one we enter that courtroom. But this is a courtroom that has two doors by which you can leave. There's not just one exit. Because you can be declared innocent. For those who persist in sin, there is that exit that leads to outer darkness and indescribable eternal punishment. But there is another exit from that courtroom that leads to life, to glorious joy, to entering into God's kingdom, to a wonderful welcome. Psalm 34 and verse 22. No one who takes refuge in God will be condemned. That is God's mercy. We all deserve God's condemnation. But no one who takes refuge in God will be condemned. Please do not shut your heart. Do not ignore God's warnings. And do not ignore God's mercy. Turn from your sin. Turn to Jesus Christ, your only hope. And ask him for that mercy. He will abundantly pardon. No one who takes refuge in him will be condemned. Let's pray.